Il-program li ser tisimaw u għamiġjub li l-kombixu għatajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the program that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus. I'm pleased to have with me today Simon Farrugia, a young researcher. I often have academics on the program, but it's very nice when I have some younger researchers as well. Just the usual brief introduction. Mr. Farrugia gained a BA honours degree in geography, I might say first class, in 2010 from this university, and then decided to follow this up with a master's in environmental monitoring and assessment at the University of Southampton in the UK. This MSc will provide him with the opportunity to learn about environmental management as well as environmental law and policy. He'll be working also on geographic information systems and on research project development. These studies, one would imagine, will give him the tools to be able to work in the world of environmental management systems and similar areas which are so very much sought after nowadays. Today, however, we're going to rewind a little bit and discuss Simon's BA dissertation thesis, which is entitled Wind Funneling Under Hajar-Im Protective Shelter. First of all, welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
I first met you when you gave a very interesting talk to the Archaeological Society some time ago. And I was very, very interested in this research, and it shows how university students can definitely contribute to information and knowledge in so many areas. Before going into the detail about your project and obviously its findings, perhaps you can describe the area where Hajar-Im is sited, as not everyone is as familiar as you and I, because I go there quite often, as we are with the area itself.
Hajar-Im is a prehistoric temple. It's in the southwest of Malta, very close to the sea. So it's about 50 meters far from the sea and lies at 100 meters above sea level. It's quite sheltered by the actual topography, by the shape of the land on its north and northeastern side, but it's very exposed on the southwest. There are no development around it, so it's very, on a very general way, it's very exposed to wind processes and to the air.
And in fact, Hajar-Im itself stands out in an area of garrigue, surrounded not even by fields, arable fields mostly, but by garrigue.
Yeah, in fact, even the area around it is not agriculture. It's very exposed. So and the fact that it's very exposed means that the vegetation that grows there is quite basic. It's garrigue, so like species, very low species like wild thyme grow there. So yeah, so it doesn't obstruct wind, but the wind itself is very strong, meaning in fact there, if you pass through there with a car, you can feel the dust coming in inside, because also there is a quarry which is now abandoned, but it's still, of course, there is still dust in it.
Walked down to Nidra, which would obviously be the temple, the lower temple, and been walking back up that pathway. Sometimes you get pushed up the hill by the wind, or alternatively, on other occasions, you get pushed down as you're as you're going down. So the winds are very strong, definitely.
Yeah, that effect is very evident, because if you have a non-shore breeze, which is very common in coastal areas, especially in the Mediterranean Sea, when the wind is coming inside, inland, from the sea to the land, it necessarily increases in wind speed, because you're going uphill also. So if you're going uphill from Nidra to to Hajar Im, you're following the path of the wind, so obviously you experience that increase in speed.
Mm, and you get pushed up, which is always rather nice. Because
it's comfortable.
Because it's quite a steep hill. So you were saying that it's Hajar Im, obviously even more than Niger, is quite high up, isn't it? Almost on the cliff edge, really, or at the escarpment edge.
It is, yeah. In fact, most of the temples in Malta were found to be on the edge of escarpments. We don't know exactly why, but it might be because they offered some form of security to the people who use them. So it's still something being studied at the moment.
Mm, they certainly had a beautiful view.
Yeah, sure.
Let's speak just a little bit more about the prevailing winds. I was interested in a diagram that I saw when I was looking at your presentation. It's so very clear what the prevailing wind is when you see the diagram.
Yes, most of mainly Maltese people would know or would experience. We have a very strong northwesterly wind, but actually statistics show that the very most prevailing wind is the west northwesterly wind, which is really similar in its effects, comes from Spain and so on. But and it occurs in 71% of the days in Malta. And also, besides the wind direction, the windiest days or months actually are between November and March. So, as I'll say later, my study was conducted in those days because it's where the worst wind comes.
But I was interested to see that despite the fact that, yes, obviously there's higher wind speeds in those months, the northwesterly is really constant all the way through the year.
Yeah, it's probably because of the, first of all, the shape of the continent, especially in the southwestern basin of the Mediterranean Sea. In a certain extent, we could say that there's a form of funneling, because the wind comes from the west, it's channeled with Tunisia, so then it's when it comes out of the Gulf of Sirte, which is the area of east of Tunisia, it's exposed, and then so it blows really faster. Besides all that, there are also the parcels of air working on the European and the African continents and on the Mediterranean Sea, which make that wind, which create a low pressure in the Mediterranean basin, and therefore the wind comes here.
Very good explanation, and I suppose funneling on a big scale. Now, yeah, later exactly. we'll be speaking about funneling on a sort of more micro scale. Yeah. When you started off the project, why were you interested? Were you interested originally, your interest was sparked because you're interested in the winds, or were you interested in temples? What sparked off your interest in that particular subject?
Well, being a student, I'm expected to follow the news. So while following the news, at that time, Hajar Im and also Naidra Shelter were quite a hot issue. And there were a lot of debate going on whether this will work, whether it will look good. Besides that, at that moment, I was following a module on wind processes, which was really interesting to me. So basically, I combined the two and came up with this interest in wind and Hajar Im protective shelter. Maybe I could introduce the hypothesis at this point, because it also sparked from these two things. Basically, we all experience how when we stand in a room where there is a window open on one side and the door open on the other side, you feel an increase in wind, sort of. It becomes more windier suddenly, even when you open the door at once. It's not necessarily for there to be a windy day, but it still increases.
You get a draft.
Exactly, we call it draft. So I said, okay, this could also happen with the shelter, because you have sort of an opening on one side and you could have an opening on the other side. And the opening was done on purpose for it not to obstruct the astronomical structure of the temple. So, yeah, I said, okay, this could also happen in the temple. And if it happens, it could actually deteriorate more the temple structure, the megalith. So, yeah, it's worth studying.
And you were describing now the exit and entry of the winds. Describe for us the basic shape and structure of the shelter itself, so people would understand exactly what you're referring to if they're not familiar with the shelters.
Yes, the protective shelter is basically an upside-down bowl or a saucepan, sort of. In fact, some critics call it a UFO, because from off-hill it looks like a spaceship, sort of. It's semicircular. However, it's just half of it, so it's just the top half, and it's exposed on the close to ground level. It's open from all around it. It's supported by steel structures, which there are not a lot of them. It's just an 8 or 10 of them, which are very thick, but they are placed in locations which do not obstruct the astrological orientation of the temple, and also not to cause any damage to any other remains which might be surrounding.
That was a problematic when they were going in. They had to keep stopping because they were finding things.
Yeah, in fact, they had to move these supporting structures around a bit so that they find the best place, because they also need to have quite a good routing ground.
The opening is actually a lot more open than I imagined it would be when I first imagined that these shelters were going up, and I imagined what they were going to look like. It is very open. You get that sense of space, even though you've got this roof over your head. So you've got quite a bit of space for the wind, your winds, to enter.
Yeah, in fact, since it's exposed all around, any kind of wind could actually affect the temple. I couldn't study just one type of wind, say the prevailing wind, because wind is coming from all around, so all of them were important.
And when you're referring to funneling as a phenomenon, what is funneling, in fact, though?
Yeah, wind is basically air. It's moving air, and there is a fluid. So, as any other fluid, like liquid, when it moves from areas of high pressure to low pressure. So, you have a glass of water and you pour it in an empty glass. The water moves from the full glass to the empty glass, precisely because there is less pressure. The same exactly happens with wind. We experience wind because there is an area of high air pressure, and next to it there is an area of lower pressure. So, the wind goes from the area of high pressure to the area of low pressure. It just flows in there. Now, when it comes to funneling, when in its course it encounters a more constricted space, like a funnel, the same air mass has still to move from one side to another, because there is another air mass behind it which is pushing it. So, in order not to sort of for the system to remain in equilibrium, let's say, so that everything continues to work, it has to flow at a faster speed. And that faster speed means that the wind moves fast, the air moves faster, so there is increasing wind speed. And we also know that wind can carry other things with it. I mean, we've all experienced on television at least the effects of a hurricane like Katrina. We've seen wind carrying large things like trees, maybe houses. But it's interesting to know that also wind is able to carry even small things. So it also carries pieces of dust and pieces of clay, which at times may be invisible to us, but they are there and they do have effect on structures. So the problem actually with wind funneling in the temple would not be the increase in wind speed per se, but it would be more the things which it's carrying being held against the megaliths, which would act like a sandblasting at the end of the day.
And you were imagining in your hypothesis that the shelters might in some way have affected or have created funneling that might possibly even be create more damage than a normal wind effect would have done without them.
Yes, since the shelter are acting as a further obstruction to the wind speed. In fact, the shelter were designed precisely to be an obstruction, but mainly to rainfall and to sun, also to wind. But the wind you cannot say the wind is coming from on top of me or from the side of me. It comes from everywhere. So they could be doing their job on one axis, sort of, but they could be failing at another axis. Since the site is very exposed and you have an exceptional obstruction in the middle of the site, the shelter itself could be actually compressing the wind, sort of. If we imagine that the air is made up of different layers, the shelter could be compressing these layers, forcing them to go through a smaller space and then coming out again from another small space. So that constriction could cause the funneling.
And what about other effects, not only on the temples themselves, but also on the wind itself? Does the temperature make a difference to how the wind itself functions?
Yeah, we know that smaller temperatures, lower temperatures lead to lower air pressures, so those will attract more wind, basically. However, the shelter in that regard could help because it creates shade, so the temperature extremes would be lowered and would be mitigated. So in that respect, it won't affect it that much. Rainfall is more a cause, or is more an effect of wind rather than a cause. So it's the other meteorological phenomena are not exactly do not cause an increase in wind. They are more like an effect, because basically meteorology is all about the changing in the air, and it all comes from the air moving from one side to another. If the air is not moving, or so, nothing would happen.
So tell us about the methodology. When you went down there for the first time and you looked at the Ajain with its new shelter, at that time it was quite new, how did you decide what methods to use to make your measurements?
Yeah, basically, since my hypothesis was that wind is increasing inside the protective shelter, the easiest and most logical thing to do to test it was to measure the wind. So I first measured the wind with the most accessible anemometer, which I had, which is basically a cup anemometer, so cups turning around to which turn a sort of speedometer, and you can measure the wind with that. But it was not effective for my purposes, because the wind is not that strong. Even though it's stronger than usual, I needed high values so that I could do statistical tests. Besides that, the cup anemometers are not that accurate, so I needed something more sophisticated, so I turned to a propeller anemometer, so the wind, instead of turning cups, it turns a propeller like a fan, and it was digital, so it had quite a high resolution. I could compare wind speeds of 0.1 meter per second difference. So then I decided to measure the wind inside the temple itself, so I measured the wind speed in all of the rooms. We call them apses of the temple. Then I went just outside the temple, but still under the protective shelter, to compare the wind before it goes in the temple and after. And so again, I had stations just outside each apse so that I could do a sort of transect. Then I went 30 meters far from the protective shelter, measured the wind speed in the same point, so it was like a radial map at the end. The 30 meters was chosen because it's the area where theoretically the effect of an obstacle in that site would stop. So we call it the boundary layer. So if the wind comes across an obstacle, it would necessarily change its course of its pathway, but at what distance would it gain it back? I worked it out to be 30 meters far from the shelter, which as the study went on proved to be almost correct.
And not only were you looking at the wind monitoring side of things, but you were also looking into the dust sampling, and that must have meant using other kinds of methods.
Yeah, since, as I said earlier, the wind itself couldn't do that much damage to the temple, even because it should theoretically decrease, especially because the shelter is decreasing wind speed from the top part. But it would be the dust which wind carries that could do, we call it abrasion effect on the temple megaliths. So again, I tried to measure the dust. It was done with sticky pads, which were basically A4 sheets. It's like double-sided tape, but they are designed appropriately for the purpose of measuring dust in deserts. They were designed to measure it in deserts, so they are quite resistant to the elements, to quite high wind speeds, and also they can last up to 1 week even in the rain, and they remain sticky. So these sticky pads were rolled up in a cylinder so that I could catch dust from all wind directions. Also, they were placed at 1 meter above ground level because 1 meter is the area where theoretically the most of the dust of the size which could damage the temple would occur. The temple wouldn't be damaged by, or at least wouldn't be affected by the wind carrying small, very small pieces of dust which would be in suspension, so like floating in the air current, because they wouldn't be that strong. But strong wind would carry dust by bouncing action, we call it saltation, which would be slightly larger dust particles of size between 200 microns to 2 millimeters, which if held against the Globigerina limestone, which the temple is made of, would cause quite a lot of damage because it's a relatively soft stone.
And what did you find when you came to unravel the rolls of sticky paper? What did you find? Did you just find dust, or did you find other elements that had got blown in as well?
Yeah, most of the particles which I found were dust, especially soil particles. Yeah, but there was the odd matter, let's put it that way, like human hair, which obviously were found in areas close to where the people walk by. Also some vegetation, which...
I was going to say some seeds, probably.
Yeah, some seeds and flowers as well, which were far from the temple, where there is more vegetation because there is a decreased effect of people, so people don't go far from them.
What about the time frames? You mentioned before that you did this within the most windy months.
Yeah, I conducted the wind monitoring between November and March, which are the windiest periods of the year. I monitored the wind in 4 different directions, so north, south, west and east, so that to have an idea of the difference in the processes which are occurring according to different wind directions. So because having an idea of the wind direction and its cause would also shed light on why it's happening, maybe because there's a source of dust in a particular area which needs to be tackled if actually there is wind funneling. And also, besides that, I waited for the windiest days in the windiest months. So, for example, I started in November, but the first strong southwesterly wind which blew was in March. So I had to wait for this wind for months.
So you'd go out in the morning, lick your finger, stick it into the air to see the way the wind was blowing, and rush off to Hajaim?
Not exactly. I used to see the
I'm sure you did it in a more sophisticated
that
way.
That would be very time consuming. I used the weather forecast, which of course it's not always accurate. So yes, there was one occasion where the weather forecast said it would not be windy, but then I discovered that it is really windy. So then I phoned the people at the temple and told them I'm coming today because it's a really good opportunity to come. Yeah, basically I use weather forecasts to predict when there will be high wind speed and the direction.
So within the time frames that you used, do you think you were able to make good comparative statistics or comparative work? It was enough?
Did more observative, qualitative work. I didn't go into statistical correlations because of the time frame I had, which was just 1 year, which is quite low when quite short when we're studying meteorological phenomena. We know how easily they can vary, especially the temple shelter itself has experienced it being torn once. So yeah, but definitely we can have clear observations and clear conclusions, although they are not maybe statistically valid, but even if they are compared to the people's experience of the wind inside the temple, they surely make sense. And also if one understands, if one puts the conclusion in perspective, in a theoretical perspective, they should all make sense.
So in this last minute that we have, tell us what conclusions you came to after the end of your
studies. Quite a lot of conclusions, depends on what detail I should go into. Yeah. But I just say what basically matters to the people outside. Basically, you don't have to worry because the temple is not causing any increase in wind speed. The temple shelter itself, sorry. However, there are three cautions sort of to make. So even though the temple shelter is not causing any increase in wind speed inside, the temple megaliths might be. So this was observed on the leeward side of the temple when the wind increased a little bit in velocity. This is basically because the wind layers would have larger area to expand when they enter the shelter due to its shape. Sort of it's really high at the middle of the temple, but it's really low on the edges. But then when it comes to the edge, the wind is funneled. It's actually funneled because there is constricted space, especially it's caused by the megaliths. When there were two megaliths or more, two big megaliths close to each other, there was an increase in wind speed. A very particular instance of this was observed in the main temple entrance, which is the one we usually see in photographs, which is facing southeast, and just on the southeast wind direction, there was an increase in wind speed even inside the temple shelter. So when I mapped the wind speeds, I observed that there is an increase in wind speed there. It's probably because it's the only part which is roof. There is a stone slab on top of it, a horizontal stone slab, which increases the wind velocity. The dust is not a particular cause of concern because it does not vary that much inside and outside the temple, so it mainly remained the same. Although, again, it's directly related to the wind, so wherever there is an increase in wind speed, there is an increase in dust.
Well, that's absolutely fascinating. Thank you very, very much, Simon Farrugia, for coming on Campus FM University Matters to tell us about your experiences of wind funneling under Hajar Ain Protective Shelter. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in this series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.
Il program li għadkom kem smajtu kien miġjub lilkom bix-xewqat tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.